So let's come and think about this story that Andy read a few moments ago. If you were here this morning, you know that for today, morning and evening, we're thinking about journeys once again. And we're thinking about two instances of where somebody has come alongside somebody else and journeyed with them through a difficult time. And as we do that, we're also going to think about what it means to walk with Jesus and some of the challenges and blessings that that brings. This morning we thought about Naomi and Ruth, that story from the Old Testament, where a young woman was a real support to her mother-in-law in her time of need and difficulty, even though at times she wasn't wanted. And this evening we're looking at this New Testament story, a story about Saul, a story about Barnabas. Many of you will be familiar with the background to this story, particularly with regards to this man called Saul. And as we piece together his story from the things that are written in the book of Acts and the things that he says about himself, we know some things. He was a well-educated young Jew. He hadn't been born in Israel. He'd been born in a place called Tarsus. But he'd grown up as a Jew. He'd been trained as a Jew, as somebody to know and to understand and to teach and to observe the law. He was a Pharisee, one of those who had a commitment to keeping the laws of God, and somebody who was passionate about protecting God's honour and not allowing anything to happen that would draw people away from God. As such, he would have been in total agreement with the Jewish leaders who had caused Jesus to be killed. They thought that he was not living according to God's law. They thought he was not doing what God wanted. They thought he was drawing people away from God's plan. And so they arranged for him to be killed. And Saul would have been fully on board with that. In fact, his first appearance in the biblical story, a chapter or so earlier, is at the death of Stephen, who we now know as the first Christian and martyr, the first person after the resurrection of Jesus who died for believing in and acknowledging Jesus. And Stephen was killed because he accused the same Jewish leaders who had killed Jesus. He accused them of doing that. He accused them of saying, when you did that, you murdered the Messiah. They were not happy, and so they stoned him and killed him. And at the beginning of Acts 8, we find these chilling words. And Saul approved of their killing him. If we read a couple of verses earlier, we would see that the witnesses of this stoning took their outer robes off and they laid them at the feet of a witness, a man called Saul. So Saul was there and he saw what was going on and he approved. He said, this type of action is necessary if we're going to preserve God's honour, if we're going to keep people following the law of God. And not satisfied with the death of Stephen, he took it upon himself to try and find anybody else in Jerusalem who was following Jesus, who was saying, well, I'm a disciple of Jesus. I believe in Jesus. He tried to find anybody who was in this emerging church, this church which had now grown to be some thousands of people. And he found them, he identified them, and he took them, and he put them into prison. He was trying to quash this movement before it started. And when he'd done what he felt he could do in Jerusalem, he thought, well, I can't stop there. I need to go to other places to see if I can find other followers of this Jesus, to bring them back so that they can be put in prison, so they can be tried. And so he got permission from the authorities to go to Damascus to hunt down believers and to imprison them, to take them back to Jerusalem. This was his life's work. This is what he committed himself to. But all that changes on that journey from Jerusalem to Damascus in a moment as Jesus appears to him in a blinding light, shows him that he is alive, shows him that he is Lord, he is the Messiah, He is the one who is what he said. He is the one that Stephen said he was. And faced with that, Saul turns his life around as he commits himself to following Jesus, to lining up with those people he'd been persecuting just a few days ago. And for Saul, who became known as the Apostle Paul, that great missionary, that great leader of the church, that great planter of many churches, that person who wrote much of our New Testament, the implications are tremendous. Instead of persecuting those people who claim to follow Jesus, instead of opposing those who recognise Jesus as God's son, suddenly this is the message he is proclaiming, knowing full well the danger it could put him in. There are people who don't like what these people are saying. They try and put them in prison. He knows what that's like. He was that person. And there would have been others in the wings waiting to take his place. But he wasn't prepared to fade into the background. He was going to live his life to point others to this Jesus who had met him and transformed his life. And using all his earlier teaching and knowledge, using his skills as a trained speaker, relying on God's Spirit that now filled him, he became stronger and stronger in what he was doing. He proved to skeptical people that Jesus was the one they'd been waiting for, the one God had promised to send, the one they should believe in. He gets so good at this that the Jews in Damascus don't like it, just as the Jews in Jerusalem didn't like it when Stephen was pretty good at this. And so they get upset, they try and kill him. But he manages to escape, he returns to Jerusalem, not taking prisoners with him, but now himself a willing prisoner of Jesus Christ. But when he gets back to Jerusalem, when he wants to join up with his new sisters and brothers, other believers in Jesus, they are afraid of him, not believing that he'd really changed and was now following Jesus, but concerned that he was trying to get their confidence so that he could identify them and have them arrested. And it's difficult to blame them. They knew what Saul had been about. They would probably have had friends who would have been arrested by Saul. They may even have come to his unwelcome attention themselves. And so they are cautious. The last time they came across him, he was trying to persecute them. About the last year I was at HP before I started training for ministry, our group chief exec, so the senior boss person, man, had to leave the company quickly due to being involved in some questionable behaviour. It was never clear whether it was inappropriate activity with the secretary or some inappropriate expense claims. We never got to the bottom of that. I'm sure somebody knew, but people my level down in the organisation didn't know what happened. But we knew he'd gone, and he'd gone quickly. But what surprised us is the next we saw of him, he had taken on a very senior position in another massive organisation, a company with whom sometimes we worked closely as partners in some areas, but in other areas we were major competitors. And we thought, we're not very pleased about this. Because suddenly, he's taken with him all his knowledge, all his insight into the way our company operated, all the contacts that he developed, and those were assets that he'd taken to this new company that was our competitor. And I doubt if many in the new company were very pleased when this person who'd been competing with them for so long was suddenly one of the most senior people in their organisation. And they might have thought, what on earth is going on? There would have been suspicion as to what was happening and why. We see it in the sporting world where athletes want to change the countries they represent and how as they do so, they're often treated with suspicion and hostility. It's understandable. But it must have been terrible for Saul, who just wanted to live as part of this new and growing community. He just wanted to be accepted for who he now was and to serve the one who'd met him and transformed his life. And then Barnabas enters the picture.
Barnabas wasn't even his name.
He was actually called Joseph. And the first time we come across him in Acts chapter 4, 36 and 7, he's selling a field he owns and giving the money to the work of the church. He sells the field and he brings the money to the apostles, those first followers of Jesus, and gives them the money and says, use this in the work of the church. And it is there that we find he was called Barnabas by those leaders, a word which means the son of encouragement. There was something about him that spoke about encouragement. I'm sure there are people we know, we enjoy being with as they encourage us. And the second time we come across Barnabas is this story here. We don't know how Barnabas knew about the change in Saul's life, but he's clearly aware of the backstory and he's not prepared for this exclusion of Saul to continue. So he steps in, he drags him off to see the church leaders, presumably in the hope that if he could convince them about Saul, the whole church would fall in line. And what he focuses on is important. He wants them to know that Saul is not the person that he was, that Saul has met with Jesus, that Jesus has spoken to him, that Saul has recognized the authority and lordship of Jesus. Saul had been transformed. His life had been turned around due to this personal encounter with Jesus. And Barnabas, knowing that that is where it has to start, wanted the church leaders, the apostles, to be aware of this. And then he wanted them to know that it hadn't only made a difference to who Saul was, but it had made a difference to what Saul did. Instead of persecuting the believers for believing in Jesus, he had preached boldly and fearlessly about Jesus. This wasn't just an inward change, even though it started there, but it set Saul off on a new path, a path of total commitment and service to Christ. These are the two pillars of Barnabas's argument as he offered his personal guarantee that Saul was now a fully committed follower of Jesus. Because of his standing and the way the other believers thought about him, they were willing to accept what he said and to welcome Saul among them, for him to become part of their community, for him to become involved in their work. What a joy it must have been for Saul to know that there was one person who believed him, one person who accepted him, one person who cared enough to speak up for him and to vouch for him. Sometimes we hear stories of a new child joining a class at school and everyone ignoring her until someone says, I'm not going to put up with that anymore. I'm going to befriend her. I'm going to be a friend to this girl. And having done that, tries to get others to accept her as well. Sometimes joining a new company, we just need someone to show they care and look out for us. A friend of mine recently started a new job and, reflecting on his first day, said, I enjoyed the warm welcome with sweets. Someone cared. Someone was there for him. Sometimes when people join a church, they can find it difficult to be accepted. They find it difficult to break through the barriers. They need someone to come alongside them to show they are there for them, help to introduce them to others, so that they can find their feet and become a welcomed, integral part of this new community. A challenge I suggest for us all. Is there someone in our church who needs a Barnabas to come alongside them and to support them and to encourage them? Is there someone for whom we can be that Barnabas? Can you remember a time when you were misjudged? And particularly by people you cared about, people with whom you were in close relationship, family, friendship group, home group, church. This must have been how Saul felt. If, when it happened to you, how did it make you feel? How did it make you want to respond? How did you respond? When I was about 24, I was working, we were living in Oldham at the time, and I was working at a company called Ferranti Electronics. And we made semiconductors, integrated circuits, and I was responsible for running the computer systems that supported the business. And I was based with in the same area as the production lines in a converted mill. A lot of mills had been converted into industrial use at the time. And that's where I was working. My boss, a guy called Frank, was in another office block about 3 miles away. And one day I was due to have a meeting with Frank at lunchtime. So I drove down there about 12 o'clock and sat down with Frank, and we had this meeting and discussed. I had not the faintest idea what. And we did what we needed to do. And then about, I don't know, 2:30, it was time for me to go back to where I was based. So I drove back to the mill and got to the gate, security gate. They had security gates and security guards you had to get through. And normally they just wave you through. But this time, the security guard said to me, "Are you Graham Criddle?" You wonder how to answer when you get those sorts of questions. But I said yes. I said, "Right, you need to go and park your car and then go to Jack's office." Now, Jack was Frank's boss, senior director in the company. And I said, "Why?" I said, "Not telling you. You're going to go to Jack's office." So I wander over to Jack's office and I sit there in the waiting room, feeling a bit like somebody's been summoned to the headmaster's office. Knowing I've done nothing wrong, but still feeling like I've been summoned to the headmaster's office. And 20 minutes later, I get called in to see Jack, who I knew well. You know, we had a great relationship. I said, "You're in a serious amount of trouble." I said, "Why?" He said, "You've been out drinking in a pub for 3 hours." I said, "No, there's been some misunderstanding. I've been with Frank." Jack said, "I'll ring him up." He rang Frank and said, yeah. He confirmed that I'd been there. And eventually I got to the bottom of it. My colleagues, the people I worked with, all of them had been out to a pub for 3 hours instead of being in the office. And somebody had found out about it and told Jack about it. And Jack wasn't very pleased about it. So he was trying to make an example. And because I was one of their colleagues, I got dragged into this thing. We sorted it out. But I felt angry. I've been wrongly accused. I've been associated with those who've been doing wrong. And it wasn't a nice experience. And when that happens, when people just get us wrong and don't understand who we are, it's difficult. It's something we struggle with. Something we perceive as unfair. And Saul must have felt that. He probably understood it, but he must have felt it. Are you aware of someone who's been treated in this way? Is there something you can do about it to help, to change things, to help them feel accepted and be part of their community? And then we come across these words written about Jesus in John 1. "He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him." Earlier in that passage, Jesus has been spoken about as the Word, the one who has always been with God, the one who was God, the one who made everything that has been made, the one who was light, the one who gave life to everyone, the one who was willing to leave the splendor of heaven and become one of us, the one who is willing to be the God-man, the one who came to share in all the sufferings and struggles and difficulties of the world. But he was not recognized by his own people. The people whom God had called, the people whom God loved in a special and particular way, the people through whom God had promised to bless the whole world. He came to them. He came to bring God's promises and purposes to a new and a higher level of fulfillment than ever before. But they did not receive him. They did not accept him. They did not welcome him. And we know that as the story unfolds, it wasn't just that he wasn't accepted, but he was taken and tried and crucified. Where was the Barnabas for Jesus? There was John, who introduced him, but later doubted. There were the disciples who walked and worked with him, but when it came to the crunch, deserted him. There were the religious leaders who became more and more opposed to him. Throughout his ministry, Jesus was often misunderstood, and there were times that people insisted that he just leave. They didn't want him around them anymore. And at the end, he stood alone. Not just against the people around him, but against all the dark forces of evil. And at the end, he was victorious as he completely carried out God's plans and purposes so that the world could be reconciled to God. And in fact, Jesus didn't just say, well, okay, I can handle being rejected. Jesus spent his time coming alongside those who were rejected, the outcast, those on the margins of society, those outside of society. And he welcomed them. He showed them that he cared for them. He drew them back into the community of God's people, to a place where they could enjoy being in the kingdom of God. Even on the cross, he was willing to reach out to one of those being crucified with him and speak words of comfort and hope and of a certain glorious future. Let's recognize, let's rejoice in and follow the example of Barnabas. But let's even more follow the example of Jesus, who time and again refused to allow people to be excluded, but demonstrated love toward them, welcomed them, and showed them that they were valuable and worthwhile. But as we do that, as we speak for them, as we speak for and testify about Jesus, let's be prepared for people to resist us and what we have to say. They treated Jesus that way. They will treat us in that way. Jesus warned his followers about this. In Matthew 10, he says to them, "The student is not above the teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for students to be like their teachers and servants like their masters. If the head of the house has been called Beelzebul, a demon, how much more the members of his household? So do not be afraid of them. For there is nothing concealed that would not be disclosed or hidden that would not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs." It is going to be hard. You've seen how they've treated me. They're going to treat you the same way. Don't be afraid of them. It's going to sort itself out. It will work itself out because I am in authority. Don't be afraid. And that's a huge challenge to us in the world in which we live, in the world in which we are called to be salt and light, to share the good news of Jesus with others. Even when people oppose us, even when there is no one like a Barnabas to encourage us, are we willing and prepared to stand firm and to follow the example of Jesus? Who, according to 1 Peter, when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. Are we prepared to do that ourselves? And are we prepared to encourage and support those who are speaking out for Jesus but are being resisted or having wrong things said about them? Maybe we are the only ones who know what they are going through. Maybe we are the only ones who can offer support and be there with them. Let's be prepared to take up that challenge and be the friend, to be the son or daughter of encouragement that they need. Let's take a few moments of quiet for us to think about those we know who need encouragement, and for us to think and pray about how we could be that encouragement to them.